Excuse me, David Piscitello.
Dave. Good morning.
Hi, Dave.
And now join.
Hello.
We're now recording.
Okay, thank you. Glenn, could you start off by reading the list of who's on the call?
Yes, certainly, Avery. On the call, we have Joe Sansevier, Avery Doria, Martin Hall, James Bladell, Paul Deer, Randall Vaughan, Rod Rasmussen, Dave Piscitello, and Greg Aaron. And from staff supporting the call, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Glenn Tlajogi. Thank you, Avery.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I want to start this meeting on the subject of the chair of this little group. We've had one volunteer, James Bladell, and I am extremely grateful to have one volunteer for taking over the role as the working group chair to finish up this last bit of the process. So I wanted to do a couple things. One, I wanted to make sure that there were no other volunteers vying for this role who just hadn't mentioned anything. Two, I wanted to mention the process. What would basically, if this group or once this group agrees to having someone new as a chair, that person could start as chair, it would need to be confirmed at the next council meeting, but that would be, you know, it has been mostly just a sanity check, and it's not a strong confirmation process, and I don't expect there'd be any issue. So, first I want to ask, is there anyone else that has been dying to volunteer and just hasn't gotten around to it yet? No. Okay. Is there any objection in the group to James taking this role? Hearing no objection, I'll take it that this group has decided that it would like to have James as its chair. Is there any objection to my turning over the chair of the rest of this meeting to James at this point? Hearing nothing, I'll assume there is no objection. As the departing interim chair, I thank you all for the help and cooperation and everything in letting me do this. And James, have a ball.
I want to jump in and just say thank you very much, Avery. It's really been a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Avery.
Thank you.
Everyone. As Avery mentioned, we're very close to the conclusion of this process. We're probably in the last phase where we can public comments from the latest round, and we need to design an approach to get those analyzed, categorized, and incorporated into our final report. Does that agree with what everyone's perceptions of the group are as we attempt to reboot this process?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. I probably should point out that I'm kind of winging this. I'm new to chairing the working group, so I'm going to be relying on some of my friends and colleagues here to let me know when I step over a landmine. Okay. This is always
sure.
This morning. if you can, Marika sent out some materials earlier in the week, including a PDF which attempted to categorize the comments into some basic categories. Does everyone have that document or can get to it fairly quickly?
Yep.
Okay, great. Just give everyone a moment there. So I'd like to spend the remainder of this call taking a look at maybe not the meat and potatoes of each individual issue, but just taking a look at the category and ensuring that we agree that these categories are distinct and their definitions are defensible, and that they maybe should or should not be combined or merged or broken out into separate categories if they become too cumbersome. Any thoughts on that? Okay, hearing none, I'm just going to proceed then with taking a look at some of the categories that Marika has in her report there. Marika, are you still available?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Looks like we have a total of, excuse me here, I printed this out so it'd be a little easier. Looks like we have a total of 9 categories, is that correct? With item nine being the largest of those. So we can take a look here. It looks like the first category is legitimate versus illegitimate uses of fast block. And there's looks like 9 possible comments that fit into that category. The one that was a little new that we were discussing was that the category 2 is in a class by itself, is the impact of fast flux on the digital divide. A few comments.
Sorry? I was just going to jump in and say I really found that to be one of the most innovative and instructive comments that we received in terms of just bringing up an entirely new area that I certainly hadn't considered at all.
Joe, can you explain that a little bit? Because I wasn't sure exactly what the core of the comments really meant.
Well, I think what he was trying to get at is the fact that, you know, FastFlux really adds to a lot of the network burden that some of the folks in the third world might actually experience. I mean, if the DNS system works the way you would hope it would work, everything goes ahead and caches pretty well, and basically it doesn't have a lot of churn. FastFlux really introduces a lot more churn and implicitly sort of provides a burden on the network links as a result. A lot of these guys are very thinly connected.
Mm-hmm. Do we know whether it's significant or not?
I'm not sure there's been a study of that, to tell you the truth.
Okay. It may very well be the case, but I have no idea whether there actually is an impact or not.
This is Ihab Shraim. I've seen an impact on the on, say, certain networks only when DDoS has been imposed through FastFlux or a massive marketing campaign by which FastFlux has been used, by which, probably a major email campaign has been gone out, and that definitely will impact certain networks, specifically the networks that are transmitting the data if it's a marketing campaign. As for DDoS, you know, the recipient network or networks will be impacted drastically.
So you've seen it in conjunction with an email campaign?
Yeah, and the as you know, they can rent these sites, but most importantly, somebody would want to distribute. If you notice, the amount of spam had increased recently, and due to the fact that every brother would like to just send something. But yes, the email campaigns do happen, and legally or illegally, and these networks are being used, and they do take a portion of the bandwidth allocated for each network.
Now, spam is sent from botnets, but how is the spam related to FastFlux?
I didn't want to say it's mainly spam. I want to say it's utilizing the FastFlux networks themselves to distribute or to impose something on the receiving party. FastFlux, of course, mainly, in my opinion, when it affects the network, it's utilized via DDoS attack.
Okay, we have to be careful to distinguish botnet activity from FastFlux activity. They are two related but separate things. Now, a website advertised in a spam campaign could be hosted on a FastFlux network, but the spam is not being sent from FastFlux domains.
Fully understood. That is a correct statement.
Yeah. And then DDoS would either be inadvertent because of the level of traffic, or it could just be an explicit DDoS attack, but that doesn't use FastFlux. That just that just uses a botnet to send traffic.
Actually, you can use a FastFlux network with DDoS attacks. Now, I'm not saying, of course, bots is where you begin everything, your spam campaign or the initial action, but you can, there are regulated DDoS attacks that are being done now. The initial DDoS attack that we know it, where a site can be just hit with to fill the bandwidth pipes, have moved to another style of DDoS attack by which they hit you at certain peak times without filling the entire bandwidth and then it disappears. And you can only do that via manipulating FastFlux networks.
Well, we've been mainly talking about FastFlux as a way of hosting some content and a way of avoiding detection. So I still don't understand how the spam is related to FastFlux, other than a site advertised in a spam campaign.
No, well said. I think they can be intermixed a little bit, but bots are the sender of any spam campaign. The initial discussion began with how do you impact networks, and normal networks are impacted, as I started my comment, with DDoS attacks.
Okay. All right. This is Greg. I don't want to belabor the point.
Greg?
Yeah.
Can I chime in? This is Martin. My understanding of reading the comment, and I'm listening to Ehab, and I think there may be something worth noting there, but my understanding was this had to do with the frequency of zone file updates over these thin links that Joe's talking about. Joe, correct me if I'm wrong in terms of my understanding, but I thought that was the issue that was being raised.
It's been a while since I looked at Woody's comments, so I might have gotten it wrong, but my impression was just that it was the general level of traffic that they were going to have. GDP traffic.
And Martin, are you talking about zone file updates at the TLD level or below the TLD level?
Well, starting at, well, potentially both, depending on the type of flux that we're talking about.
This is Rod. I have the same impression as well, that he's really talking, that nothing to do with malicious use necessarily. It was more about the fact that if you're using fast flux networks, whether it's Acme or the Russian business network, whoever it is, it's acting just in general the level of DNS updates that occur.
That's my understanding. I concur.
I just want to go back to Joe's point. This was the single most interesting comment to me out of everything that we got. And I'm not sure that we had anything really in the report that addressed, the impact on bandwidth and this, so-called digital divide. And it might be worth some lines of addition to the report that talk about bandwidth implications, and we can potentially separate that into at least two areas. Number one, there is the frequency of zone file updates and the impact on bandwidth. And listening to Ehab, it may well be worth noting that, where there are botnets and compromised computers that sit behind these thin links, then there may be bandwidth implications from that as well.
This is Aubrey. Can I point a secondary effect I think may be relevant? It's not only bandwidth. Within the digital divide, and that's one of the areas I spent a lot of time in, within the digital divide, because of the payment methods that they have, they are actually paying for all traffic that is both sent to them and that they send. So there's also, if the bandwidth usage is increased by this, there's also a real financial impact. So they both have narrow pipes, and they pay for everything that goes down them in both directions.
This is Dave. I think we also have to pay attention to the fact that this is not simply an infrastructure that could be exploited for web and traditional IP traffic, but also for SMS over voice networks. And again, it's not only the bandwidth, the remarkable cost that it's going to impose on people, and the ability to do that in a very, very large scale manner in a very, very pernicious way to attack a particular population or culture.
Excellent point. And this is James. It sounds as though that this is this comment in particular is very thought-provoking and raises a number of issues. One of the questions I would put to the group is, can we do this justice in as an add-on to our report, or should we possibly recommend, maybe perhaps reference this comment and then recommend a larger study on this issue as possible next step? Any thoughts?
Such a study might be interesting. I'll also say that it'll take a lot of time, and it seems like a fairly complex project.
Okay. Do we want to then try to at least give it a cursory treatment within all existing reports?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, and we can then separate that out from the other comments. Do you believe that it merits its own, from an organizational perspective, I see a category of one on number two and on number eight. And, I'd love to find a way to merge number eight into one of the existing categories or find relevant items elsewhere that can be used to further substantiate that category. But it sounds as though item number two, Mr. Woodcock's comment, would be that that we should flesh that out a little bit more and touch on that in our report. Thoughts, agreements, disagreements?
This is Aubrey. It seems to me that doing, a little bit of expansion on it and putting it in there with perhaps a pointer that it needs more investigation. So basically following sort of both approaches that you've had seems reasonable.
Yeah, don't we already say that law enforcement would benefit from the cessation of a fast flux attack network?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Was that Dave?
Yeah, if we did not say that law enforcement would benefit from the cessation of fast flux attacks, that would be, I thought we had enumerated that as one of the groups of people who would benefit. So it seems like a relatively small addition to a long list of people that would benefit from cessation of fast flux attack networks.
So you're jumping to category number eight. Mr. Derry Warner's comment regarding law enforcement seems to be very closely related to his comment number seven about if criminals benefit, then clearly law enforcement would benefit from a cessation.
Right.
Any thoughts on merging 8A and 7C from Marika's list into sort of a compound comment? I mean, obviously we can't merge the language of Mr. Warner's comments, but at least for categorization purposes.
I mean, it's all in the same section. So I think they're both relevant, and it's more or less just trying to complete the list.
Okay, good point, Dave. Marika, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think we were separated here because there were as well two different questions that were part of two different questions that were asked as a charter question. So I think that's why I basically
okay.
broke them out here, but no problem in merging them.
Were there no other responses that discussed benefits, folks or parties who would benefit from the cessation of fast blocks? Was this the only comment on that question?
I don't see any problem with leaving it as a separate category in the comments. I think once you get to the fourth column of where it got fixed or where it got dealt with, then you'll find it's the same place as the stuff from 7. But leaving its visibility is one of those good things for afterwards when you sort of attach this table, perhaps, to the back of the document that shows, you know, these were the comments and this is how they were dealt with. Keeping it separate seems to have that visibility advantage.
Good point. Any thoughts on Aubrey's suggestion? Okay, well, let's proceed that way then, leaving it separate, but to gain some visibility and then address it where appropriate when we're discussing our comments. Were there any other categories that were listed that folks thought perhaps were could be broken out into multiple categories? And right now I'm just kind of looking at item or group number 9. Which has I'm trying to count the letters here, but it looks like about 20 different items. Is that correct? Very good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I just, looking at that category, I'm wondering if there are any opportunities to further subdivide that category as proposed for next steps and possible solutions, if we could identify who would be carrying out the next steps, or if there was a sequence required, or any dependencies or interrelation between these proposed steps, that might be one opportunity to further provide some resolution on this category.
This is Rod. I'd say there's a natural divide here because of concrete actions and specific details versus more study of X, because you have lots of different comments about more studies.
Okay, that's a good point, Rod. So some of these are actionable, and some of them are requesting additional information.
Yeah.
Some of these are also specific directives to system administrators or operators, either at the endpoint or at the edge or in the core, and so we might be able to look at that. For example, securing applications with technology and filtering and whitelisting are all things that are kind of standard litany for how we apply countermeasures in other, you know, other attack vectors. And so we might, you know, we could probably go through this list and group those.
Yeah.
There also could be a significant number of registration-oriented suggestions that might be fed into one of the other groups that's looking at registration of use.
Okay, so that was you're suggesting that some of these might feed into other activities or working groups. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact that, for example, 9N is something that FSAC is looking at now and will probably publish something by Sydney. So asking FSAC to take a look at this would, you know, be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy since we're already doing it. I think that you know, adopting the accelerated domain suspension and several other APWG-oriented statements here kind of suggest that one recommendation is to explore further to the GNSO is to explore further some of the valuable valuable contributions that the APWG has made in this area, in the general area of, you know, of mitigating abuse. And that's already underway.
Okay, so it sounds like we have a couple of ideas, and maybe we can adopt them both to further subdivide Category 9 into those comments that are direct actions and those comments that are requesting additional information. And then one or both of those categories can be further subdivided into who the targeted audience or recipient or let's call it owner of the action item could be.
Yeah.
Did we break this into three categories or four?
Can we go ahead and go over why we're breaking them up? Is it just go ahead and try and highlight the underlying themes, or?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last bit there. While we're breaking them up.
I was just asking why we're going ahead and working on trying to subdivide them further. If anything, I'd be kind of inclined maybe to try and pull them together into fewer clumps, but.
Okay. Well, I think that if we are looking at what actions specific groups can take, then we can definitely fold those items in with number four. There seems to be some overlap with category four, because now we're talking specifically about what actions registrars and registries can undertake. So that kind of builds on what David's comment was about when we're talking about system administrators or those who are control of the end nodes, what role of ICANN. So it seems like there's perhaps some correlation with Category 4 and Category 6 with a subset of Category 9. Any thoughts on that approach?
Are you basically just trying to go ahead and change it from sort of a topical focus to an actor focus in terms of, like, who's going to have to do things with these, or?
I'm just pointing out that if we break up Category 9 based on who the next steps are directed towards, then that sort of implies that some elements in Category 4 could also fit into that group.
Okay.
This is Marika. I thought Avi's suggestion made sense in saying, doesn't it make sense to see where these would fit into the report, and then you will see indeed which ones actually belong together and form a theme instead of maybe breaking them up here.
Okay.
Because then we're just subdividing the table, and actually I don't think we're getting them to, it might take longer than getting them discussing where they belong in the report, if at any page, or whether they're already addressed or not. But not sure what the rest thinks of that.
It's a good approach as well. In that case, then, we would probably want to take a look at the categories in terms of the sections that we have in the report and the different charter questions. Is that correct? Marika, if I'm understanding you.
Yeah, I think that's, if I translate well what Avery said, that, you would come to see which points belong together if you discuss where they would be incorporated in the report or where they have already been discussed. So you can see then in the fifth column, once you have filled that in or discussed that, which comments are actually part of the same group or belong in the same spot.
Okay.
I think Avery did that.
Yeah.
Interpret you correctly?
Yeah, no, that pretty much does. I mean, one possible way would be to sort of accept the division, because it's really just a way to make things visible and start marching through them, having discussions of look at the first one, view of the working group. Oh, well, no, that's already covered. Or, oh, good point, needs amplification. Or out of scope, in scope. Make all those decisions for your fourth column. And then whenever the decision in view of the working group was, hey, we need to add something to the final report, then you go to the final column and you say, okay, where does this go? And then you'll see after you've done a first march through, as it were, that, oh, okay, these things were in section 7, these were in 6, these were in 4, and then you've got a second natural grouping of where the work and the wordsmithing needs to be done.
Okay. So what does the group think of that approach? I think that's a sound way to proceed. Then the question would become, We would just essentially dive into the first category and try to identify where that where those items fit. And then a possible work plan for this remainder of this meeting. Looks like we have about 25 minutes remaining. Is that correct, Marika? We would just...
Correct.
Yeah, we would just continue with Section 1. It seems like we had a really good conversation on Section 2. I'm certainly not opposed to taking these out of sequence if we have the right parties and expertise on the line to tackle something that's in a category of its own first. Okay. Well, let's take a look then first at the comments that are in question one. Any objections? Okay. Looking at question 1A, there was a comment from, looks like R. Atkinson. Distinction between legitimate, all of these are going to discuss legitimate versus illegitimate uses of fast flux. And I think that we covered this fairly extensively within our report. Is that correct, Marika?
I think so.
Okay.
What would Rand mean by a clearer distinction?
Good question. Possibly a viable value for TTL so that we understand what low and what high means and what an obvious versus non-obvious reason would be.
Rand Atkinson's comment was fairly long and and touched on a number of different issues. I think one of the things that we could do is task someone to just go through it. I'd be happy to do that. I know, for example, that one of the issues that he wanted to raise that hadn't been raised was that. One of the legitimate applications of fast flux that we did not cover was the way it is employed in mobile networks. RAN, if you don't know, is one of the principal developers of mobile IP RFCs. So referring to his expertise there is probably quite valuable for us. But if you want, I'll be happy to take his comment and sort of summarize what we might want to include in the report from it.
That would be fantastic, Dave.
And I also thought Rand fairly, I haven't talked to him in probably 10 years, but I know him well enough where I can ask him for specific specific feedback or clarification. So I'm happy to do that.
Okay, and just as we go through this, I imagine that may come up with some of the other commenters. But Marika and Avery, is there any process or protocol that we should be aware of when reaching out to folks who submitted public comments for further clarification?
I don't think so. I think, anytime someone wants to contact, obviously if there's someone on the group that knows them personally or well, that's the easiest path to take, but no, there's no formal. I mean, working in the working group or I've read your comment, it's interesting, but can you tell me more? Kind of note makes sense. And yeah, with Ren, I also know him, but it's good that, Dave would contact him and ask for clarification, and I'm sure he'd be more than willing, especially when you get to one of his later comments that, and hey, once this is here, pass this over to some of the IETF groups was really, a good thought.
Okay, thanks.
He's still in the IAB, I forget.
I'm sorry?
No, I was just wondering to myself if Rand was still on the IAB or whether he wasn't anymore.
I don't think he's on the IAB any longer, but I do believe he continues to participate in the IETF.
So then, Dave, you are going to take a look at his comment in greater detail and then possibly reach out to him for clarification or question.
Yeah, I mean, if there's something that I think, something I don't understand, at least well enough for us to summarize. I mean, obviously, we're not going to write a litany about mobile IP, but if there's something else in his comment, I will be happy to, happy to reach out to him. So,
okay.
I'll try to do that by our next teleconference.
Okay, and is there a possibility that his comment is driven that there's some specific aspect of mobile networks that we've overlooked?
I think that I'd have to go back and read the whole comment, James. I just recalled that when I read it, I said, "Yeah, we forgot mobile IP, didn't we?" So I just need to need to reimmerse myself in it. I mean, it was fairly lengthy; it was several pages of an email. So,
okay.
But I'll piece through it and pull out the issues that I think we should raise in the report, and I'll post them to the mailing list.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you looking into that. So if there's no other discussion of 1A, we can move on to 1B. This comment submitted by Klaus seems to have a lot of, at least reading the summary, seems to echo a theme that's very common, which is that individuals disputing that there is a legitimate purpose or use for FastFlux at all.
Actually, this is something I was going to ask Avery about. When somebody states something that the working group has clearly, clearly come to a counter conclusion, what is our obligation?
I think that in our explanation, in the response that we publish to things, basically saying that, we appreciate the comment, but we have seen these various legitimate reasons or whatever, that could do that. And that I think there's basically an obligation to say, we've heard the comment, we've discussed it, we've gone back and looked at any new stuff that you've mentioned that perhaps we hadn't thought of, and yeah, we remain where we are, or we tweak A, B, C based on what you said. But, I think we have to take the comment, look at it, make sure there's nothing new in it.
In some cases, I think it's almost as if the person commenting may not have had a chance to review the entire report. You get my drift.
Hello?
Hey, I'm a desk worker.
And sometimes, when reading something, they may not see the emphasis is there as clearly as they might have liked to. So there may be a tweak or two in the wording that you get from, the content of what they say. But, no, I don't think you need to change the report before you get a comment, because you get a comment that's opposite. You just need to think it through and say, yep, no, we said the right stuff. We said what we meant to say, and this is why.
That's a good observation and good guidance there. One other possibility would be if we see a large number of comments on something that is maybe not as visible as it needs to be in the report, we could find different ways to highlight that, moving it into its own section or possibly drawing better attention to something if we see that there's a great deal of confusion or that it's just drawing a lot of comments that we weren't expecting.
The other thing that you might do, since we have places in the report that say, strong support, some support, I'm not getting the words right at the moment, and alternative views, if a comment strongly backs up an alternative view, we can add something that says, and there were comments received from the community that emphasized this view, so that the full content is there. But you certainly don't need to change, unless, of course, your mind is changed by what they say. If somebody comes up with a really great reason to refute something that you all
you know, thought of and said, oh, yeah, right, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, of course. Then, you know, I expect that to happen a lot. But that's always, that's an open possibility.
Right. Okay, so I think that there's a lot of similarity between this comment 1B, and can probably be addressed similarly with comment 1C and 1E. Does that make sense? That a single bit of language perhaps can identify the comments, those three comments, and perhaps reference them simultaneously.
So I would imagine that, with the exception of 1A and 1G, that we could, you know, this a summary comment that explains that we, you know, what the, or reemphasizes what the working group concluded is sufficient.
Okay, and I'm just turning the page here and looking at H and I. And I think that those would support what you're saying, Dave.
In that I guess the only thing that I would imagine perhaps I would, you know, would prompt us to do would be to look at some more recent work in distinguishing fast flux networks from, you know, legitimate uses from fast flux attack networks. I just don't know how much, you know, how much bandwidth this working group has left to do that. So we might want to say that we encourage, you know, continued, you know, study into the dynamics and the, you know, and the changing attack surface.
Okay, thoughts from the group? I think the proposal is to take a look at 1A, 1G, and possibly 1I individually, and then perhaps group together the remaining items in Section 1 as being sufficiently similar that they could be addressed by a common paragraph or section.
What about 1H? KC is an awfully influential individual and usually has excellent comments. I have to admit I agree with her comment in this case, too. I don't think 1H deserves to be kind of just lumped with the others.
Okay. And maybe there's something that I'm not getting from the summary that's in the larger comment. Is that?
I think the whitelisting, if we haven't, I can't remember whether we expressly called out whitelisting as, you know, as a way to address false positives, but that's certainly something we could put in. I actually think that the statement that she makes, up to the point where, to the first comment, where there are so many measurable differences it should not be difficult to separate them, is a very, very legitimate response for us to include in our responses to the other people.
Remembering KC's background as probably the most proficient person in the internet at measuring what's going on at some level, you know, it may be interesting to know what she actually sees there. She is a measurer more than most.
So is this an opportunity for us to reach out to KC? I mean, Avery, did I misunderstand that there was...
I'd need to go read her comment completely, which I haven't done. But just, you know, and perhaps that's something that, you know, I could take a look at. I haven't seen her in a couple years, but talk to her every once in a while. But
this is Greg. I think what she's saying is there are enough indicators that you can reliably figure out whether it's a bad site or not. And what we did in the report was we said, we mentioned a lot of those indicators. We mentioned the need to avoid false positives, which is something she mentions. I mean, what I think she's saying is it's fairly easy to figure out which sites are bad or not. But she also says you need some additional mechanisms and policies in place to make sure you don't finger somebody accidentally. I think we said that in the report.
I know that Casey had seen some of the other comments before she made hers, and you know, part of this is the reaction that she had to, you know, to some of the other comments, and you know, I mean, Casey is not, you know, doesn't suffer silliness too, you know, too readily. So I think that she was, you know, quite exasperated that some people would say that, you know, some of the things that were said in this sort of more terse and, frankly, less informed comments than hers.
Another thing that they point to is perhaps some, you know, something that can happen in the actions, you know, or things that can be investigated later in terms of ways to do this. The whitelisting may be something, if it's not already in the report, can be included in possible avenues that people can look at.
What would folks think of as maybe a table separating or highlighting some of the differences between legitimate and illegitimate uses of fast flux? Kind of to respond to that comment.
Well, is it the uses or is it the things that are measurable differences between
the measurable bits?
That might be interesting to see. So we can, I think it would be a useful experiment or not an experiment, but useful effort exercise for us to perform. And if it looks like it adds value, it does in fact, you know, address some of the questions, you know, or some of the comments that we should, you know, make, call more of a distinction between the two. So we satisfy Alan Murphy's comment in one eye by adding a table that calls more attention to, you know, to the differences.
I'm thinking that we did, and it's been a while since I'm trusting my memory here, but did we at one point attempt to inventory all of the familiar to anyone else?
I lost almost all of your comments, James. I'm sorry. My connection is not all that great.
Okay. It just sounds very familiar that if we were to try to, but we're talking about not necessarily the legitimate versus illegitimate uses of FastFlux. We're speaking specifically on our metrics that would be used to detect FastFlux. Am I understanding this approach correctly, or?
Yeah.
Okay, so these are essentially the red flags.
I would think but that's the way I interpreted it.
Okay.
Looking at the comments, I was just going to say, it looks like there is actually some emphasis on use in the two comments, the H and the I, rather than just the, you know, abstract issues. So it really does touch use, Aubrey, as you were mentioning.
And as it mentions use, then that starts to seem very familiar to me. That we that's familiar territory from our report, where we were illustrating all of the different uses, potential legitimate uses. Is that sounding familiar to me, or to anyone else, or?
Well, actually, I mean, I need to read the comment because it's talking about more behaviors. So the second comment, the Alan Murphy one, is talking about use. But perhaps the answer to the I, and one of the things that I'm noticing while I'm sitting here talking is, even though I've read the thing many times, the month since I last, or beyond, more than that since I last read it, has left a lot of holes in my memory, and I'm going to need to read again before I talk too much more. But KC seems to be talking about behaviors, which are things that can be observed. Your red flags, perhaps, or our white flags, you know, green flags, whatever they'd be called, that are behaviors that are actual things that can be seen, measured on the network, whereas the Murphy comment seems to be talking about, you know, additional information on how to separate legitimate use. Now, the answer to that may be you can separate them by using these measurable behaviors, you know, to some extent, etc. But behaviors and use are slightly different.
By the way, should 5B actually be part of 1 instead of part of 5? That's Suresh's comment.
Suresh's comment, legitimate use of FastFlux, do not use hijacked bots. So essentially, we're going back to the idea that that one of the key distinguishing points of legitimate versus illegitimate is whether or not it's on a compromised system.
Right. And since 1 is legitimate versus illegitimate, it just seems like 5 really almost cries to move up to 1.
That's an excellent point.
Haven't we made that point pretty explicit in the report?
I think one of the things that we tried to do in the report, and one of the things that I know I've tried to evangelize as I've talked about what we learned through the report, is that, you know, no one indicator suffices here, and that, you know, there really is, you know, a need for considerable analysis to, you know, to essentially draw the conclusion that the network is an attack network, or it's, you know, or the purpose is for some productive legitimate use. And I really hesitate to try to answer each and every one of these by saying yes, that's correct. Yes, no, yes, yes, that's sufficient, because we know that it's evolved at least twice already. And the variants continue to appear, and so trying to say, okay, well, we're not going to consider TTL for this reason, or we're not going to consider that compromise or that a bot executable on a compromised machine is one of the markers, is pushing us back to a point where we. We floundered for a very, very long time. So I just want to caution us not to overload some of the obligation to respond with making this too complicated. There are some people who are going to look at the report and maybe seek in the final report for some absolute cookie cutter way to be able to identify FastFlux attack networks, and we know that doesn't exist yet, and it may never exist. So I just want to caution us not to get tempted to be pulled into that direction.
A good point, Dave. And I think that the more we start to peel back the layers of some of these individual comments, the more we start to take a look at some of the, if not language in the report, then deliberations we've had in previous calls and meetings. And I think that, you know, we should be mindful of our goal, which is to kind of push towards putting a wrapper around this particular working group. You know, whatever that outcome would be, we want to take all the time necessary, but we should always try to keep it moving forward and not going back and reopening some of those issues that, as you correctly pointed out, we kind of reached a consensus that there wasn't a clear-cut solution. So I tried to identify everything in the report and go forward from there. We want to just maybe stay away from those circular topics. Of course, open to the possibility that one of these comments may actually be like a bolt of lightning and cause us to revisit those with a different perspective. And I think that you know, there's definitely some potential for that in this group.
And there may also be the small stuff like fake who is contacts often bought with stolen cards. Now, I don't know if that's particularly relevant, but I don't remember us ever talking about stolen cards and whether that's any sort of additional indication. But that may be. But it's really the due diligence and looking at it and saying, yep, yep, covered, covered, covered. Oh, maybe not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go in before I talk more.
Just looking, it looks like we're starting to kind of approach our or reach our time here.
Would it be worth sending comments on various items as they're categorized to the list, or is that something you just want to keep doing on the calls? Or,
well, I was going to. That's a great point. I was going to throw that out to the group. Is that could we set ourselves a goal? And everyone, I know that David and Aubrey have already volunteered to take some of the work off list. But can we volunteer to assign ourselves some homework as a group to work through the items that are listed here in category one? On the list and be ready to discuss their categorization of where they fit into the report and what the view of the working group is, whether they were sufficiently covered in the report or whether they warrant further and new or reopened discussion. If we targeted item or category one for this next week, then we could come to the call and have a start to make some determination of where the support lies for these different different ideas, and then we can reopen for item two and possibly three during our next call. What does everybody think of that approach? Recognizing, and I should qualify this, is that if it sounds like I'm winging it a little bit, I am. We're really just trying to kind of get this, keep this thing moving forward, and make sure that we're being thorough in touching on all of these different comments, making sure, as Avery said, that there isn't some small mention or sentence or idea that we completely overlooked in this process, and we need to get it incorporated in our report.
It seems to me a good approach to get, you know, a first stab on each of these things that serves as, you know, the bit of work that we beat up on in the next meeting. You know, so that somebody volunteers to say, like, I have to take the 1H and say something, and then that would be a good starting place for something to say, no, you're completely wrong, yes, et cetera. Then, you know, you do have a starting place to go from. I think it's a
can I ask a question just in the interest of getting things done? Are we under an obligation to address every single public comment? Or are we under an obligation to review, pick the ones we think are important, and say something about them?
I think at a minimum, if there's a comment, at a minimum we should say, you know, we acknowledge the comment. So I think we're under the obligation to acknowledge comments, but not necessarily respond to them.
I think that the staff, in their new GTLD process, did set a fairly decent standard of looking at questions. Certainly, when you have five or six questions that can be categorized as the same comment, then you can answer those with one answer, you know, and such. But I think that there's one of the comments that we've often gotten from people in the GNSO Council is that you don't take community comments seriously enough. And I think one of the things that we've decided to try and do, and as I say, the staff gave us a very good example of it in the new GTLD process, was, yes, to take each comment seriously, to group them when they can be grouped, and to address each and every issue in some way. And I do believe that, you know, so it's somewhere in between what you asked. Do we need to answer each one individually? I don't think so. Do we need to have taken it into account?
So if the groupings look good, then the least we have to do is address the groupings of comments.
Yeah, and there would probably be various standout things that, you know, we wouldn't address. So, yeah, there could be a base comment to the group, a base response to the group of issues, and then, you know, and then some specific things brought out would be one way to approach it.
I agree, Avery. If there's some, if there are those comments that spark a new discussion or take our deliberations in a different direction, then we should definitely highlight them and respond to them, and possibly, if it's appropriate, even reach out to the commenter. And I have seen in the past other working groups have invited folks to post to a list or to participate in a call on a guest basis. I think all of those are options that are on the table, but if we find that there are several comments that have a lot of common elements and are thoroughly addressed in the report or can be addressed with a, minor changes to the report, then we can address those as a category while acknowledging the that they were part of a group of comments from individuals. So one way to go forward here for the next week is to there's two options I can think of off the top of my head. One is that we, as a group, attempt to respond to the different items in Category 1. Another way would be to solicit volunteers and or inductees to take individual items separate and then report back to the group. I guess we've already got a couple of volunteers for item A and item H. Do we have anyone who wants to volunteer for, or a group of folks maybe want to volunteer for those B, C, D, E, and F that are a little have a little more common elements? Or we can, obviously we have no standing to make assignments, but We do want to keep this going. I think that if we leave this open-ended, there's a very real possibility that we could come back here next week with just a couple of these addressed and a lot of holes in Section 1. So,
is there consensus about the two extra columns and the comment section, essentially the view of the working group and how, where to incorporate? Are we in agreement that those are the right things to have essentially there as a report?
No, I don't think that's necessarily been settled, but I think that we definitely want to focus on column 4 at this point, how and where to incorporate into the final report, or whether to incorporate into the final report, or whether it's already addressed in the final report. I think what we're looking for here is an assessment or an analysis of the comments as individuals and say, you know, is this sufficiently addressed? Are there new elements raised? Is this something that we feel that the group may have possibly overlooked in its earlier work? But I don't think that those comments are set in stone at all. Columns. I'm sorry, not comments. Those columns.
They seem useful. They seem like things we have to deal with.
I think so, too, but there could be more. Is that possible?
I guess my concern is just with the final column. In many cases, the comments that are there are actually things that are already in the report. So I guess sort of my suggestion would be to sort of rephrase that last column as, is this already addressed in the report? And if not, where should it be added if it is going to be added? But in many cases, I think some of these comments are already there.
So one could put if/how/where.
Excellent approach, yep.
Yep. I think that's a good approach. Any opposition to that? Okay, I've already taken us almost 10 minutes beyond, so I still wanted to focus on any volunteers or group of volunteers to, and we're going to take Dave and Avery off the list since they've so graciously already thrown their hats in the ring through our deliberations, but any other volunteers for remaining items in Category 1? Cricket.
What I'd like to go ahead and do is just take a shot at sort of seeing if I can peg where each of them basically fits and probably just provide a real terse comment or two for each of them because they're not actually all that many of them.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm having trouble recognizing voices. Was that Joe? Yeah, okay. We'd appreciate that, and then I will go ahead and volunteer Joe to work with you on that. We're talking all the items in Category 1 except for A and H, correct?
But yeah, well, what I'll go ahead and do is just provide a very brief kind of response to each of them. So essentially, if it's a one-line comment, I don't think we want to have a two-page response.
Oh, exactly. And I think there's a lot of commonality there. And then the other open question, I think it was possibly raised by Greg, was that 5A should be moved into question or to Category 1. Was that Greg?
I think that might have been me again. Sorry, this is Joe.
Okay. Yes, okay, Joe. So perhaps we could include that as well.
Seems to me that both 5A and 5... This is Jose from Arbor. Seems to me that both 5A and 5B could easily be fit into one.
I think the... I think that's a good point. So why don't we, because again, we're over time, so why don't we just take that approach of tackling item one, and I would just encourage folks to please monitor the list and stay active. If you have contributions to make or want to throw your hat in for some of these other issues, or if you feel strongly about one of them, or if you feel that perhaps it's not getting the attention that it deserves and needs to be in a different category, all those items, please please stay so on the list. And when we get together next, we can start to take the temperature of the group and see where we're at as far as support for the analysis. The question I have, Marika, is this our new time slot now, or... are we just going week to week with a different doodle?
We hope that this is the new time slot. There's only a conflict next week, so we would propose to have the next call in 2 weeks' time if everyone agrees with that. Otherwise, we would need to send out another doodle to find a time for next week. So if there are no objections, I would like to propose to have the next call in 2 weeks' time at the same time, same day, if that works for everyone.
I'm not going to be able to make that one. This is Joe.
Fine with me. This is Jose.
Okay. Fine with me. This is Ehab Shrine.
Well, if the expectation is this is an every other week call, then that possibly opens the opportunity for us to get more accomplished in the interim. So I would just say stay tuned to the list. We'll try and get Category 1 addressed before our next call and possibly open up the discussion on the list on Category 2, which is the very thought-provoking topic.
Yeah, and James, just to clarify, I think the conflict is only there for next week, so if people in 2 weeks' time feel that they want to have a weekly call, I don't think that's a problem then.
Okay, maybe we can then put that as our first item of administrative housekeeping before we dive into the material of the report or the comments, so that during our next call we will discuss how we want to go forward from there.
So this is okay. Glenn. I'm hearing you correctly. We are going to skip the week. We're going to skip the 15th of April, and then we're going to go on to the 22nd. Is that it?
Yes, that's correct. You know, for those in the U.S., it's tax day, and having a fast once meeting on that day is just kind of, you know, compounding the.
Is that the 15th is tax day?
Yeah. So.
Okay.
We would hate to do that to folks.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of fast flux attacks on IRS.gov during the next week for us to study too.
Does
one of the things that some of the phishing and fraud scams do is try to get people to disclose their personal information by claiming to be the IRS, and there's something wrong with your tax submission, and oh, your e-file information is incorrect. We couldn't route your refund to the back number you provided. Please log in and give us a new bank number. It's not just the United States. Her Majesty's revenue, in England is equally beset. Pretty ugly.
I still do mine on paper, so what can I say?
I put my money in a mattress from now on.
Okay, well, with that, let's conclude the call for this session, and we'll reconvene in 2 weeks. Of course, there should be numerous action items and activities on the list. So thanks to everyone for participating. This is probably the best turnout we've had in several weeks, and excited about
the timing for that.
And kind of resetting this group and getting a thorough analysis of these comments and getting them into our final report, and turning that over to our council.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.